The History of Marriage Custom, Part 3. We're going to look at the wedding march, the white wedding dress and veil, and then, ominously, a little look at divorce in antiquity, Asia, and Africa. Now, the traditional church wedding features two bridal marches by two different classical composers. The bride walks down the aisle to the majestic, moderately paced music of the bridal chorus from Richard Wagner's 1848 opera Lohengrin. The newlyweds exit on the more jubilant, upbeat strains of the wedding march from Felix Mendelssohn's 1826 A Midsummer Night's Dream. The custom dates back to the royal marriage in 1858 of Victoria, Princess of Great Britain and Empress of Germany, to Prince Frederick William of Prussia. Victoria, the eldest daughter of Britain's Queen Victoria, selected the music herself. A patron of the arts, she valued the works of Mendelssohn and practically venerated those of Wagner. Given the British penchant for copying the monarchy, soon brides throughout the aisles, nobility and commoners alike, were marching to Victoria's drummer, establishing a Western wedding tradition. The wedding dress and veil. Now, white has denoted purity and virginity for centuries. But in ancient Rome, yellow was the socially accepted color for a bride's wedding attire. And the veil of flame-hued yellow, the flammeux, covered her face. The bridal veil, in fact, predates the wedding dress by centuries. And the facial veil itself predates the bridal veil. Historians of fashion claim that the facial veil was strictly a male invention and one of the oldest devices designed to keep married and single women humble, subservient, and hidden from other males. Although the veil at various times throughout its long history also served as a symbol of elegance and intrigue, modesty, mourning. It is one article of feminine attire that women may never have created for themselves. Originating in the East at least 4,000 years ago, veils were worn throughout life by unmarried women as a sign of modesty and by married women as a sign of submission to their husbands. In the Muslim religion, a woman was expected to cover her head and part of her face whenever she left the house. As time passed, rules, made by men, became stricter, and only women's eyes were permitted to remain uncovered. A concession to necessity. Since ancient veils were of heavy weaves, this interfered with vision. Customs were less severe and formal in northern European countries. Only abducted brides wore veils. Color was unimportant, concealment paramount. Among the Greeks and the Romans by the 4th century BCE, sheer translucent veils were the vogue at weddings. They were pinned to the hair or held in place by ribbons, and yellow had become the preferred color for veil and wedding gown. During the Middle Ages, color ceased to be a primary concern. Emphasis was on the richness of fabric and decorative embellishments. In England and France, the practice of wearing white at weddings was first commented on by writers in the 16th century. White was a visual statement of the bride's virginity, so obvious, and a public statement that did not please everyone. Clergymen, for instance, felt that virginity, a marriage prerequisite, should not be blatantly advertised. For the next 150 years, British newspapers and magazines carried the running controversy fired by white wedding ensembles. By the late 18th century, white had become the standard wedding color. Fashion historians claim this was due mainly to the fact that most of the gowns of the time were white, that white was the color of formal fashion. In 1813, the first fashion plate of a white wedding gown and veil appeared in the influential Journal des Dames. From that point onward, the style was set. So we've covered a lot of things on marriage. That's a little tidbit here on divorce. This is in antiquity in Africa and Asia. Before there can be a formal dissolution of marriage, there has to have been an official marriage. The earliest extant marriage certificate was found among Aramaic papyri, relics of a Jewish garrison stationed at Elephantine in Egypt in the 5th century BCE. The contract is a concise, unadorned, unromantic bill of sale. 6 cows in exchange for a healthy 14-year-old girl. Under the Romans, who were great legal scholars, the marriage certificate mushroomed into a complex, multi-page document of legalese. It rigidly stated such terms as the condition of the dowry and the division of the property upon divorce or death. In the 1st century AD, a revised marriage certificate was officially introduced among the Hebrews, which is still used today with only minor alterations. Divorce, too, began as a simple, somewhat informal procedure. In early Athens and Rome, the legal grounds for the dissolution of a marriage were unheard of. A man could divorce his wife whenever he turned to dislike. Although he needed to obtain a bill of divorce from a local magistrate, there are no records of one ever being denied. As late as the 7th century, an Anglo-Saxon husband could divorce his wife for the most far-flung and far-fetched reasons. A legal work of the day states that, quote, a wife might be repudiated on proof of her being barren, deformed, silly, passionate, luxurious, rude, habitually drunk, gluttonous, and quarrelsome or abusive. Anthropologists who have studied divorce customs in ancient and modern society agree on one issue. Historically, divorce involving mutual consent was more widespread in matrilineal tribes in which the wife was esteemed as the procreative force and the head of the household. Conversely, in a patrilineal culture in which the procreative and sexual rights of a bride were often symbolically transferred to the husband with the payment of the so-called bride's wealth, divorce strongly favored the wishes and whims of the male. It's a sad commentary. But that completes our little brief journey through marriage. Now, the source of this is the Penates Extraordinary Origins of Everyday Things. There's also a Penates Extraordinary Ends to the Various Things that perhaps we'll play with a little bit later on. So I hope you enjoyed that. As always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.